Cocktail College is brought to you by Tequila Don Julio. Don Julio Gonzalez followed his heart over his head. He loved his land, agave, and community. Basically, every choice he made was for exceptional tequila, something I know you can appreciate, Cocktail College listener. He did it por amor, and this is how people from Mexico basically live every single day. Hecho en Mexico, loved everywhere. Head to www.donjulio.com/tequila-drinks for a list of cocktails to create with Tequila Don Julio's expressions. Made with love in every drop.
Hey, this is Tim McCurdy, and welcome to Vine Pairs Cocktail College, a weekly deep dive into classic cocktails that goes beyond the recipe with America's best bartenders.
I want to encourage people to just have fun with it, right? Incorporate in everything. Taste the different tequilas, taste the different flavor nuances that come within it, right? Blanco through the ultra age category, they're all very different.
I'll admit, it was probably a little hyperbolic of me to state in this week's episode that we've covered almost all of the classic tequila-based drinks here at Cocktail College. So don't worry, there are plenty of tequila episodes in our future. But given this spirit's versatility and its many guises, unaged Blanco, lightly aged Reposado, and beyond, it is a bit of a head-scratcher why the list of well-known tequila cocktails is so small, relatively speaking. And that got me thinking. If you wanted to reimagine a classic cocktail that originally contains a different spirit, but mix it with tequila instead, how would you go about that? To find out, we tapped Manuel Manny de Avila, the Los Angeles-based brand ambassador for Don Julio, who spent his bartending career in LA at a number of top spots, including Bestia. Forget what they told you about old dogs and new tricks, listener. We're bringing accents of agave to the tried and true classics today. And it's all right here on the Cocktail College podcast. Manuel Reynaldo de Avila. Manny, un gustazo. Hermano, thank you for joining us today. Sorry, that's not the limit of my Spanish, but that's all I'm going to use today. You know, how's it going, my friend? Thank you so much for joining us on the Cocktail College podcast today.
No, Tim, thank you for having me. I'm super excited to be here. Longtime listener, first-time guest, I guess we would say. So thank you.
Beaming in all the way from sunny LA. Love it. It's a bi-coastal conversation today, but one, I would say, that is important, or hopefully notable to all of America, because we are in this moment right now where tequila is on fire. It's like the Kings of Leon song that we're not going to get into, but you know, tequila is doing so well right now. I think the best example of this that really captures the topic that we're about to get into is I can't tell you how many times folks who aren't involved in the industry but friends keep coming up to me and telling me how much they love espresso martinis made with Reposado tequila or with, you know, Blanco tequila. And I'm like, that's two of the biggest things, two of the biggest trends happening right now, colliding. Manny, you obviously are seeing this firsthand. Well, do you want to tell us about that? Just tell us about this current tequila boom that we're experiencing and enjoying.
Yeah, it's super awesome. I mean, I obviously love the booming culture, the growth of all these different brands, because it ultimately just elevates the bar of tequila as a whole, and along with it, Mexican culture. And I just love seeing my gente, you know, thrive and shine. So I'm super happy about that. But what's lingering and weird to me is, despite all this love for tequila, like a lack of super classics. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And people being so precious with the spirit, sometimes being afraid of like mixing it and experimenting with it in different classics.
Mm-hmm. And that was something that really came up for us. You know, this, here's a little peek behind the scenes for the listeners here. That came up for us when we're talking about, you know, we're going to do an episode together. This is going to be a lot of fun. But, you know, Cocktail College being essentially a show that looks at, we do other things, as you know, and as the listeners know, but essentially looks at one classic drink each time. I start going through the tequila classic playbook, even the modern classics, and I feel like we've covered maybe all of them, or some of them even twice. Why do you think, before we look at what those cocktails are and remind ourselves of what those cocktails are, Why do you think we haven't seen this maybe, you know, the same definitely wouldn't be true for American whiskey or gin, say, or rum, right? Like, it feels like there's maybe endless options on those fronts.
Yeah. I mean, although we see a lot of like the amazing classics, like the super historical classics kind of appearing in different places, I ultimately think that the cocktail is like the culinary gift from the US to the world. We've had a lot of amazing bartenders historically then travel out of the US into different countries and kind of create cocktails, right? That said, when I look at cocktails and tequila, I think people in the US have just been looking at it as so precious, right? Looking at it as just like a Mexican spirit, therefore it can only be used in a classic Mexican cocktail and paired with classic Mexican cuisine. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I find that's such a great point. It's such an interesting point that you make there.
It's funny to me because I've noticed that when it comes to cocktails, people forget that mixing spirits is just, you know, like mixing ingredients when cooking. All you're doing is really playing with flavors, right? So when serving tequila cocktails, I sometimes hear, wait, that's tequila? Like, I would have never thought of mixing, I don't know, X ingredient with tequila, which is quite funny to me. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. And of course, I think that there's probably a historical aspect to this too, right? Like you said, the cocktail is America's great, not just a culinary gift, it's America's great gift to the world, right? This idea of making cocktails, mixology. But it is interesting where bartenders never seem to be afraid to use, you know, gin, which is traditionally a British spirit. I won't hear anything about it being Dutch in Geneva. I'm sorry, I won't have any of that. It's a British spirit, you know, or rum from, you know, Caribbean rum. And, you know, I think it's strange that people would take that approach, like you say. But then maybe if we look historically, you can talk about different eras of time that maybe had an influence, right? So that kind of New England period where you see people coming across the Atlantic and maybe favoring gin. Or, you know, you have this deep homegrown American whiskey culture. And then otherwise, you know, rum, where we're sneaking across out to Cuba during Prohibition, that, you know, that's where bartenders are going to ply their trade. That's where rich people are going to drink during that era of Prohibition. So maybe that's just why, you know, those particular ingredients gain more prominence. I will say that, you know, my homeland, it's kind of a similar story, actually. Scotland, people treat scotch a little bit too preciously, right? They're like, no, you have
exactly,
to sip this.
Yeah.
And there's relatively few scotch classics either.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think that that's another big factor it's playing into with, you know, not just tequila, but all agave spirits, right? It's beautifully artisanal. The history of tequila, all agave spirits, goes back millennia, right? Back to, you know, the times of the Aztecs and, you know, drinking pulque and all that situation. And it was kind of like, it was considered a holy spirit, right? A spirit of celebration and so on and so forth. So I think people kind of have still kept that notion of it's precious, you can't mess with it, like this and that, which there's definitely some iterations of tequila that I would say, yeah, like, it, you know, you don't really want to mix it too much. I want to encourage people to just have fun with it, right? Incorporate it in everything. Taste the different tequilas, taste the different flavor nuances that come within it, right? Blanco through the ultra age category, they're all very different and very much bring in different flavor components to a cocktail that are quite fun.
Mm-hmm. One thing that comes up quite regularly on this show is what we like to call, or what people have coined, the kind of Mr. Potato Head approach to making cocktails, right?
And oh, yes.
And I think that's basically what we're going to be getting into today. So we're reimagining classic cocktails today with tequila. We're going to learn from yourself the different applications for different styles of tequila and how you might use that Mr. Potato Head approach, take those existing classics. Because, you know, that's been an approach that's been throughout history, right? Like, we see that this is just another evolution of it. Before we do that, though, and before we get into that, and also just leaving our listeners with a whole playbook rather than a specific recipe today, before we do that, though, let's maybe just go through what we would consider the classics or the most widely known cocktails. I'm going to start with an easy one. The margarita needs no introduction, needs no further explanation. Where would you take it from there, Manny?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you can't talk about tequila without talking about the margarita, right? But if we were to jump from that cocktail straight to another one, I mean, almost synonymous with it is La Paloma, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a classic cocktail that has like some obscure origins. But, you know, it's nice, simple. It's a ringer, grapefruit soda, lime, salt, and of course, your tequila.
Phenomenal drink. Then another one, El Diablo. Maybe not one that's not quite so well known, but we've definitely covered here on the show. Decent drink, that one. Sleeper hit.
Yeah, that one. And you know what? You talk about sleepers. Like, that's definitely one that I've been really enjoying as of lately, which is also just a nice, super simple, that might not be quite known as the Batanga.
Ooh.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
yep.
And that's, you know, that's, I love tequila just with like no frills and just having fun with it. And, you know, this is a nice little simple cocktail consisting of Coke, lime, salt, and again, tequila in a tall glass.
And you want to talk about a phenomenal ingredient to mix it with as well, Mexican Coke versus the stuff we're getting over here north of the border these days, you know, worth the trip alone for that and the tequila. But what I love about the Batanga too is it's like, you know, we've covered that story on this podcast, but we also covered the Cuba Libre, and it's like giving a name to that cocktail, but also the Batanga's story and the people behind that drink or that specific preparation that then kind of gained it that name. That's definitely one I'd encourage listeners to, you know, search for that episode or do a little bit background reading on that, because it's a fun story, that one.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's all these classics, especially with the ones that consist of tequila, like everybody fights over who created them and whatnot. I mean, for the Batanga specifically, like, I believe it's credited to Don Javier Delgado Corona, right? Like, sometime around the 1960s. Mm-hmm. No, that's actually his. It's the Paloma that's also sometimes accredited towards him.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a solid cocktail.
Solid cocktail. And look, I'm going to be honest with you here. I tried to do no kind of cheating, or I don't have any notes in front of me that are listing other cocktails. I'll be honest with you, I'm kind of running dry there at that point. Or there's the Carajillo.
Yeah, the Carajillo. I mean, you know, classic espresso with, what is the liquor, 43?
Liquor 43.
And a lot of people like...
Actually, no tequila. Yeah. Yeah, some people are adding tequila. No, that's right. But it's more of a, yeah, the liquor 43 is, would be the alcohol there.
Oh, but Tim, I mean... It's almost like, to me, blasphemy to not add tequila to the Carajillo. I know that that's the original cocktail, but I would almost put that synonymously in there with just classic cocktails. So I'll give that one a pass, absolutely.
Well, that leads me to ask, do you make a classic margarita, or are you more of a Tommy's guy?
I am a Tommy's guy. I think it's arguably the best tasting margarita. And I got some awesome advice way back when, and I think the Tommy's margarita is the perfect example of it, is that you don't necessarily need to make a new wheel. You just need a solid wheel. You know what I'm saying? And talk about just perfectly like tweaking a cocktail to make it just so delicious. Mm-hmm. I'm a Tommy's margarita guy.
Yeah, me too. And I think that's a great way of highlighting what you've already said and what we're doing today, which is talking about, let's not be too precious about things, right? Like, just because the original margarita is based upon a daisy and it has the Grand Marnier, you know, the orange Curacao, sorry, we can improve it. We talk about it on this show so often as well, where it's like, this was the way it was done historically, but guess what? The ice they had back then was terrible, if they even had it. The spirits were different. How long had that vermouth been sat outside? You know what I mean? So like, we should be focusing on making the best possible versions of drinks with the ingredients and tools that we have in front of us today. Let's not be too precious. So let's do it.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
And I think a nice little transition for that is talking about some of the modern classics that have taken that approach. Let's start with the Oaxaca Old Fashioned. Tell us a little bit about that drink.
Oh, the Oaxacan Old Fashioned. So me being the walking character for Don Julio, being their ambassador, I definitely drink a lot of tequila cocktails. And this is probably the one that just never disappoints, right? I see a lot of iterations with it. Obviously, the one mixing some tequila and some mezcal with a little bit of agave, mm-hmm. You know, some bitters. I see sometimes Angostura, sometimes I see grapefruit, sometimes I see a combination of both. And then, you know, obviously stirring that in a beautiful rocks glass and then finishing it off with a twist. And this is where I also see different variations, either an orange twist or a grapefruit twist. And those subtle little nuances make all the difference. Mm-hmm. I love some nice aged tequila. So I definitely use a beautiful añejo. I drink my Old Fashioneds with 1942 and it just hits the spot every single time.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. You know, I do love that. And why we're kind of highlighting that too, is that being this bridge into our conversation, which is like, you know, Phil Ward, who's been on the show before, inventor of that drink, and probably definitely not the first person to make an old fashioned with tequila, but like popularized that, included that bit of mezcal. But he's someone who time and time again would use that template of reimagining the classics with ingredients that were then maybe new to him or lesser known to most of the people sat in front of him at the bar. All of this has got me kind of got the kind of creativity inside me excited here. So let's talk about it. Let's hopefully there might be some kind of easy rules and takeaways that people can, you know, learn from this. Maybe a lot of it's going to be more nuanced. But if we're approaching Blanco tequila, where might that fit into currently existing cocktails out there? Unaged spirits, or are there any spirits that it shares a lot in common with where you're like, you can almost basically swap this out like for like, and it's going to create a new drink, but it's almost always going
to
work?
Yeah, I to say that you could always swap tequila out with X spirit is a little difficult for me to say.
Yeah.
But what I would say is, I mean, we're looking at cocktails again. My biggest tip here is focusing on flavors. Mixing cocktails should be looked at as, you know, as cooking, as culinary. Well, for example, Don Julio Tequila is a Mexican spirit and very proud of it, right? That said, amigos, we are tequila that is packed with layers of flavor. So why not play with that? Mm-hmm. When creating a cocktail, I want to either highlight complementing flavors or juxtapose contrasting flavors to create depth and complexity in a cocktail. So when, for example, Blanco tends to have beautiful earth tones with whispers of tropical fruit and stone fruit, right? Because of this, I love pairing it with tropical fruit like guava, some citrus, and sometimes even vegetables like celery or beets. You're just playing around with flavors, kind of mixing them around and just balancing them. At the end of the day, all a cocktail is a strong to add backbone, a bitter and a sweet. And that's it, right? And you just play around with those. So that's what I would kind of, where I'd start off with Blanco. And then as I move throughout the different rested and aged expressions, for example, the longer you age a tequila, the more barrel notes it gets. I'm talking caramel, toffee, vanilla, coffee, notes of roasted agave, like all amazing things, right? All delicious notes that almost pair with anything.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, like these more aged tequilas, I think you mentioned it earlier, like, yo, in an espresso martini, they shine.
Yep. And specifically, I hear reposado called for a lot. And I've got a question for you on this one, because I'm a cocktail enthusiast. I certainly love drinking them. I like making them at home. I don't tend to do a lot of cocktail creation. But one thing that I do often think about is, when is the occasion that I'm reaching for a reposado? And reposado works really well in the espresso martini. But when else? Because again, through this formula of like where we might be applying these, you know, new spirits to classic drinks, it seems obvious where you would go añejo, extra añejo, or unaged, or blanco, or joven. But where does reposado come in? Because it's kind of this outlier within spirits at large, right? Apart from maybe rum, where you have those like lightly aged rums, like this kind of spirit doesn't really exist in any other category.
Yeah, it's got a lot of those like super young notes, and then it's got a lingering undertone of barrel, right?
Mm-hmm.
But again, we're just looking, if we just look at the flavor profiles, right? What type of flavor notes kind of come within a reposado? So you got these amazing kind of like almost slight caramelized barrel notes that I think work amazing in kind of just adding a beautiful like seasoning to citrus. So I really like adding reposado to a citrus cocktail. I mean, look at the paloma. I think the caramelized barrel notes from reposado just beautifully season like the grapefruit soda and lime in it, right? Like if you were to just think of like cutting a grapefruit, adding some brown sugar and caramelizing it, that's kind of how I envision what a reposado tequila does to like citrus.
Yeah.
Specifically grapefruit, I guess. But I would think of it like that. I hope that answered your question.
No, definitely. Yeah. And inspired something for me too, where, you know, you can use this light touch of sweetness, that light caramel that you have with a reposado that you're not going to get from a Blanco. And you can use that to counteract flavors that are maybe otherwise where bitterness is not the predominant flavor profile, but it's an aspect of it. And you know, you mentioned there, okay, you mentioned grapefruit soda, but if we were talking about actual grapefruit juice, right? We've got the tartness, we've got, you know, we've got acidity there,
yeah.
But we have a bitter lingering finish to that, where I feel like you said, that light touch of sweetness is just going to really round that out and dance together.
Exactly. And if we're still talking about bitter flavors and kind of how to round those things out a little even further, I mean, again, I just go into, we're talking about tequila, super hot. Espresso martinis are super hot. Mm-hmm. And what goes amazing with like those bitter kind of coffee notes is just those beautiful notes from the barrel, right? You know, those amazing notes of, I specifically like using Don Julio 70 in my espresso martini, like those amazing notes of chocolate and vanilla, I think just tie the espresso martini up so perfectly.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you know, we mentioned that, like, in place of, say, you know, our other aged spirits, be that rum or maybe, you know, more commonly American whiskey or whiskey in general, we can start looking to añejo.
Absolutely.
What about extra añejo? Because I feel like oftentimes price is a consideration here as well for people at home or people working in bars. And also some of the nuance that's in that, is that maybe a step too far beyond, or are you going to say, you know, maybe for special occasions?
If I'm putting my old beverage director cap on, I think it might be a little bit too difficult to always add that, to add it to my menu. But I mean, geez, I'm as of lately, as especially within the past few years, you know, going through a pandemic and not knowing what might be happening next, I am very much an advocate of the treat yourself mentality. So if I really want to spoil myself or a friend or family member I'm hosting, mm-hmm. why not add a delicious, rich extra añejo? Why not make, in a cocktail, right? Why not make a beautiful old fashioned or something nice and brooding that can stand up to your like main dish in the dinner you're serving? Mm-hmm. So I prescribe to the idea of not being super precious where it makes sense, right? I'm not going to tell everybody behind a bar like, hey, you should put extra añejos on your menu because it might not make sense, mm-hmm. you know, for the bar. But if a guest walks up and wants something just super sexy, why not treat them to that, you know?
And also, you know, like you said earlier, let's not be too precious about things. I always say,
absolutely.
You know, the best bottles in my shelves at home, at least, none of them are exempt from being considered for cocktails. If anything, those are the ones I'm going to first if it's a special occasion. What about this as a concept or an idea, you know, that would work probably a little bit better for a bar program and maybe highlighted by that Oaxaca old fashioned as well? What if you end up using a little bit of extra añejo as a seasoning in something, right? So you can justify it from a cost point of view, but, you know, that's going to add some oomph to a drink or another formula that's already going on there.
And I've certainly seen that quite a bit on menus to kind of like, that's the way that people play with the costs and whatnot. I think it's a very smart way of doing so. You know what I'm saying? At the end of the day, the name of the game is hospitality, right? So finding a way to just add so much layers and add an amazing experience to what you're giving the guest, I think is amazing. If you could do that within your program, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And look, then it also, again, it makes it attractive. Not that we're trying to pull the wool over anyone's eyes, but from a guest perspective, you're like, oh, there's extra añejo in this cocktail. Oh, and it only costs, who knows, $19 to $23 or whatever. You're like, this feels like I'm getting a good deal. So again, not that we're trying to fool anyone, but that's maybe an extra selling point for a drink when people are looking through those ingredients on the menu. I'm going to try now. I'm going to ask a couple questions now. I'm going to hit you with a couple cocktails. And I'm going to ask for your advice on how I might approach them at home with a nicely stocked bar of tequila, I should add here. But, you know, definitely the Blanco goes first in my household. And regular listeners will already know the drink that I'm going to ask you about here. Because while the espresso martini is definitely booming, I'm a classic martini guy. I'm a gin, dry gin martini guy. And you know what? I've tried making a tequila martini. I've not been able to make it happen. I've tried with mezcal as well. Again, I just can't make it happen, but I want it to happen. So tell me, should I be thinking this more of take that Oaxaca old-fashioned approach? And again, it's not intentional that we keep coming back to that, but split the base, go 50-50 gin and tequila plus vermouth, or is it that the vermouth doesn't work quite as well with tequila as it does with gin or, say, vodka?
I mean, gin and vermouth just go hand in hand so beautifully. But I think it's a matter of finding the right balance and the right with the right vermouth and the tequila, right? I'm a big fan of 50-50 martinis. I just think they're just nice, light, decadent. And I've certainly played with martinis, tequila martinis, and this. What I've enjoyed, and I don't know if it's just my palate, but I think it's amazing. I do like a nice dry vermouth called Noilly Prat.
Yep.
You know, it has a beautiful kind of salinity that I think goes really well with some, like the, some of the earthy vegetal tones that do come within a Blanco or a Reposado tequila. I actually like making my martinis two parts, either a Blanco or a Reposado Don Julio with that actual specific vermouth. And I do kind of add a lemon and a grapefruit twist, kind of discard them and just kind of enjoying that way. That's what I enjoy, yeah. Right? But I really think it's a matter of finding the right balance of vermouths, because some of them, well, let me take a step back. Tequila, right? Very nuanced and subtle flavor profile, especially on the younger side. Some vermouths, that's another category that I think is kind of booming right now too. Some vermouths are just sometimes a little too floral and overpowering.
Yep.
And that's why I think it's just a matter of, again, just playing around with it, having fun, and see what works.
Yeah, definitely. And I love that idea of, by changing the base spirit, then we can start to reimagine the garnish as well, right? Like, people are like, you got to go lemon or twist, or if you're having a Gibson, then you can have an onion in there. But that's basically it. Everyone else is like, everything else is off limits for the martini. You know, this is sacred. But now we're introducing a Blanco or a Reposado. I can imagine that grapefruit expression, maybe a discard there, so we're not getting some of that bitterness into the, you know, into the drink.
Exactly.
I can see how that would work really well. I was wondering, because you were talking about, you know, a dry vermouth for that. I was wondering whether maybe an approach I should try taking at home as well is Bianco vermouth, right? Just getting a touch of that residual sugar from that, that's going to match some of those wonderful, like, vegetal kind of green. And I say green not as in underripe, but green as in like those kind of vegetal pyrazine-y notes that I love. I love seeing in my tequila, and then getting some fruit after that, right? Like, might that slightly sweet but still white vermouth work really well too?
So I think I mentioned earlier that I do like my 50-50s. And yes, with the Blanc vermouth and tequila, that's actually how I enjoy them.
Yeah.
So I think it actually pairs really, really well. Again, you're not going to get like those beautiful kind of botanicals kind of just jumping at you like you might with a classic 50-50 with gin, but you certainly get a nuanced cocktail, right? And I would describe the same way as you said, kind of like earthy, kind of like those vegetal herbaceous notes that play really well with like the sweeter notes found within a Blanc vermouth.
Mm-hmm. All right, and then we're going to go to another cocktail here, but I think what's really interesting about this as well is like a lot of the classic templates do already exist, right, for a tequila drink, right? So, you know, where might people head next? Daiquiri, right? The daiquiri, we're basically talking about a Tommy's Margarita there, right? Or, you know.
Exactly, so, yeah.
So, yeah. Done, covered that one. What about, and I know that our sister spirit there, our cousin spirit there, Mezcal, has been embraced in this way, but the last word template, that's a template I love so much because I find it to be so incredibly versatile when it maybe shouldn't. Four ingredients in a drink, equal proportions, and somehow they all come together and work. And you know, we're talking about complex ingredients there, whether you're using gin as your base spirit, whether you got some chartreuse in there or an Aperol, depending on if you're doing like a paper plane, or if you're doing like the modern, the Naked and Famous, or the more classic, like the Last Word. But somehow these things seem to work. Am I missing off the top of my head a classic example of a tequila-based formula of that 4x3 quarter ounces?
I don't think I've played with a classic mix and just playing them like that, that kind of immediately work. You know, I always like to kind of tinker around with the ratios. Like, I'm a big fan of tinkering around the ratios. One of my favorite cocktails, for example, being the Negroni, right? Classically 1-1-1. But again, I talk about what specific ingredients, what specific like different vermouths or tequilas you're using. In that case, I almost always tweak the ratios. Mm-hmm. So it's a little difficult for me to...
Yeah, I know. That is a very difficult question just off the bat there. But let's talk about the Negroni because, you know, fantastic drink. Definitely a formula that people love approaching, reimagining. Obviously, classically with gin, are we sticking in Blanco territory here or are you heading elsewhere? And if you're heading elsewhere, how does that affect our other ingredients?
Yeah, so... funny we're moving into this one because the Negroni, might own my life. I just love this cocktail. You know what I'm saying? and I've actually been playing quite a bit with this cocktail and tequila. So recently we just launched a new tequila called Alma Miel, which I love. It's almost difficult to say this, but it might be quickly becoming one of my favorite tequilas within our portfolio.
Wow.
But because of this, I wanted to marry two things I love, right? I wanted to marry the Alma Miel along with the Negroni. Again, when my thought process when making cocktails is you got to taste each ingredient and see how it kind of works out. Alma Miel is a joven tequila, and we make it a very special way. We blend a very special blanco with a very special añejo. The blanco is special because within the second distillation, we reincorporate delicious roasted agave, which in Mexico is known as agua miel. Then we blend that blanco with an añejo that has been matured in limousine Cremant casks. And then when you blend these things, you just have a tequila that just plays everywhere within the flavor spectrum. I'm talking about lingering notes of wildflower honey, agave, citrus, and a hint of herbaceous undertones. To me, that goes amazing in a white Negroni.
Nice.
You know? So I've actually been playing around with it. And again, everybody has their own different versions of a Negroni or a white Negroni or whatever. At the end of it, it's your classic strong, a bitter aperitivo, classically Campari, and then an aperitif wine, right? Like a vermouth, a sweet vermouth. So I really mess around with this one, but I keep the classic inspiration, right? So I like to do, I like to start off with 1 1/4 ounce of Don Julio Alma Miel. And then I follow that up with, this is where I get kind of fun with it, 1/2 ounce of some Ancho Reyes Verde Chili Poblano liqueur. You know? So to me, this liqueur has like a subtle bitter undertones with a hint of spice that I think complements the Alma Miel quite well. From there, I add like about 1/2 ounce of Celos Aperitif, which has bittersweet notes of gentian and an earthy flavor with earthy flavor notes with like a vegetal touch that I think, again, pairs amazing with both the Alma Miel and the Poblano Chili Liqueur. And then I finish it off with 1/4 ounce of Blanc Vermouth. And we mentioned Blanc Vermouth earlier, right? So that nice, subtle sweetness ties all the ingredients together quite nicely. Finish that off with a lemon twist and, you know, just a fun, fun way of like just playing around with flavor notes and just coming up with something absolutely delicious.
Nice. And are you building that in a glass with a big old rock there, or how are you preparing that one? Do you want to just do that quick build, easy, unfussy?
So when I'm at home, just kind of building cocktails, absolutely, you know, unfussy. I do have like big chunk ice that I play around with. Just do that, build it in glass, you know, it's for myself, right? But if I were to build this at a bar, I like to control the dilution as much as possible. So I'd probably first build it in like, I don't know, like a Yari glass, like a mixing glass, right? And then pour it over my rocks glass or up if they so please. But if I'm pouring it into my rocks glass, fresh ice, right? That way you get nice cold chunk that hasn't started the pre-dilution process already. So that's how I'd go about it.
Nice. And are you taking that into consideration then, the dilution? Like knowing that, okay, if you've got optimal conditions, right? You know, you've got a chilled glass, you've got a big old rock there waiting for it. But might you opt to ever so slightly under dilute when you're mixing it, knowing that that dilution is going to come? Or are you more of the school of thought where I'm going to appreciate this as a drinker, the evolution of this cocktail?
Yeah, that's a great thought. All right. So if it's going up, I want it to go out perfect, right?
Yes, for sure.
I want it to be perfect when it sits in front of the guest, and that when it hits their lips, I want it to be like perfectly diluted and perfectly chilled. When it's sitting on a rock or rocks, I certainly take that into consideration. No guest is going to like pound it, or maybe they will, but it, most likely they're what they're looking for is a nice kind of like experience, chatting up their friends, chatting up their date. So I want them to have a beautiful experience throughout. So I definitely kind of think of it that way. So I might dilute it to the point where it's just below perfect,
yeah.
Whereas it sits, you know, it evolves into the perfect cocktail by the end of that sip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. And I'll tell you this too, I'm a massive proponent when it comes to drinking, you know, Boulevardiers, white Negronis, Negronis maybe slightly less so, but Boulevardier and white Negroni, I love drinking up. For some reason, I prefer that preparation or that serve of that cocktail that way. It's just... I don't know. I just like up drinks, I guess it is.
No, absolutely, Tim. And like just kind of those richer notes within a Boulevardier. I'm also a big fan. And again, I mentioned that Negronis own my life, like all these variations. So I've played with that too, like kind of using like the classic Campari, classic sweet vermouth in with my tequila, my Don Julio Alba Miel, again, because I've been playing around a lot with that specific tequila. And I found that a lot of people just like to swap out the spirit and kind of go through it. I think that tequila in a Negroni, like if we're using the Campari and the sweet vermouth, I think it does need a classic little tweak. So I would call it a modern classic, not a classic, but there's a cocktail called La Rosita, which is amazing. You know, this is a cocktail with, you know, your tequila, your Campari, your sweet vermouth, and in addition of dry vermouth and some Angostura. And the ratios definitely kind of change up on this from your classic Negroni, which is fun.
That's a classic one there. Or sorry, like you said, a modern classic. You know, friend of the show and you know, Vine Pair contributor and writer Robert Simonson definitely did kind of help out a little bit for this one with, I believe it was 2021, he released his kind of tequila and mezcal cocktail book, which is a great resource. And yeah, definitely leaned maybe more heavily on the modern classics than the classics, as we're kind of discussing in our conversation here today. Manny, any other cocktails? Because I know you've put in the prep for this app. I know you've been tinkering around, working with little different drinks. Any other ones that you've been preparing yourself that you're like, oh, I got to share this one with the show today?
Yeah, I mean, I am the Don Julio ambassador, so I do go around, but I'm a bartender at heart. Mm-hmm. I love making cocktails, right? And yeah, I'm a big coffee fan. I travel a lot and there's a lot of like long late nights. So I've definitely played around with the cocktails with my Don Julio and some coffee, right? So going back to this Rest Martini, there's a variation of it that I absolutely love. I do love like my Don Julio 70. So an ounce and a half of that, an ounce of Mr. Black, which is just my favorite go-to coffee liqueur. I also like to add, I guess what I like to call like a cold brew cordial.
Yep.
I guess it's essentially like a cold brew that I've kind of sweetened a little bit. This is like about a 3/4 ounce. And then I season it with 1/4 ounce of classic Ancho Reyes and some chocolate mole bitters, long, hard shake to get that beautiful crema. And this cocktail gets me through those long travel, you know, work trips and whatnot, which I absolutely love.
I love that. For those who might not be familiar, you know, you mentioned, Agua Miel there. Don Julio 70, that's the Don Julio 70, that's the Cristalino Don Julio. Am I making that up?
No, you're not making that up. It is actually the very first Añejo Cristalino. Very, very delicious tequila. I mean, so for people that don't know, Cristalino, the way people kind of like quickly categorize it is it's a, you know, tequila that's been kind of charcoal filtered, right? But what makes this tequila, this Don Julio 70, shine so well in like an espresso martini, for example, is that the charcoal filtration is not just for color, right? There's a lot of beautiful things that you get when you age tequila, right? You get those beautiful, rich barrel notes, but there's kind of a lot of bad that comes with it. You got to take the good with the bad, right? You get those resiny tannins. So in a world of, I want to have my cake and eat it too. It's like, how do we do away with those like resiny tannins and while also keep those beautiful aged notes? So charcoal filtration for us actually is what we use to not only take the color away, but really hone the spirit within our Don Julio 70 to really highlight the highs and do away with the lows. So what you get is this beautiful añejo with all like just packed with vanilla, packed with like, you know, that those beautiful classic barrel notes, that agave that I think just seasons and the coffee notes within an espresso martini just so beautifully well.
I love it. And you know, here's the thing here that we're talking about. I haven't tried that version of that cocktail. It makes sense to me. I lucky enough to have worked in a kitchen as a chef for a couple of years, so I can kind of picture flavors and how they might come together, or, you know, in a very kind of basic way. But I can see we're ticking all the boxes there, the profiles working together. It's like jigsaw pieces, right? I get it.
Yeah.
The interesting thing here that I want to talk about as well is like Cristalino is probably not the style of tequila that I'm first reaching for. But actually, that sounds like the perfect version of that cocktail or the perfect application for that tequila. Do you know what I mean? And I find it interesting that you mentioned earlier that, you know, way up top, people are a little bit too precious about things, or people, especially for whom it is not their tradition, right? People are very precious about other people's traditions. And I find that strange because, you know, you're talking about agua miel there, where it's like, this is an innovative new product. We tend to celebrate innovation in most things. Cristalino too. It's not the classic original style of tequila that people have enjoyed, but what I'm trying to say, I personally think there's a place for it there. You've clearly got more experience with that. Some bartenders don't always agree, and I would maybe argue that that's just basically being kind of closed-minded. Is that fair enough to say?
I guess so. Yeah. I the thing I think it is that, again, just the culture and like the history of agave spirit just comes with so much. It is precious. It is, there's like the religious aspect that goes way back when. So people want to respect it.
Sure.
And I respect that they want to respect it, right? But one thing that people don't realize about just, you know, Mexican people, Mexican culture, and honestly, Latinos and Hispanics as a complete community is that we love people joining in our culture. We love seeing them partake in what we love to do, right? And seeing them kind of take what we do and kind of evolve, I think just kind of helps elevate and expand our culture even more. So mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of just kind of, again, yeah. just having fun with it.
Definitely. No, and of course, I'm 100% on board with you as well. Like, we want to respect tradition. We want to be respectful of people's opinions. Everyone is entitled to their own, and that is absolutely great. We also, but we want to be respectful also of people who are looking to innovate and change things. And I think one thing that's really interesting about the Cristalino conversation as well, you know, you're describing that process. We often forget that this is also the way we achieve some of the world's finest or most enjoyable rums that we enjoy in a daiquiri, right? And, you know, maybe rum was missing a little bit of a trick by not coming up with codifying a name for it as well, because Cristalino has almost become like a brand, a style of thing that people just don't realize. Yeah, this has been happening in rum for a long time. We love it there as well.
Absolutely. Like, it very much been happening for a very long time with rum. I mean, there's some giant, huge brands out there that have been doing this charcoal filtration with their spirit since they started, right? And it's really a matter of just fine-tuning your spirit. And why wouldn't you do that? You know, why wouldn't you use cool, innovative techniques to just provide a better product to your guest? So, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. So I don't know. I think those are interesting conversations to have. And, you know, just going back to that espresso martini, that take on the espresso martini sounds wonderful. I got a slightly left field question here for you. You know, I know you travel a lot, or I assume you travel a lot with your job there.
Yeah.
What's your airport bar tequila drink order?
Yeah, it would be Paloma.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's just at Paloma. It's just so crushable, such a ringer. And sometimes, like, I do find places that do carry just like that bottled squirt. And yes. I'm a big fan of just like super OG. Like, no, you know, I'm just trying to have like a decent, chill, relaxed time at the airport just before I board. So I do love a Paloma. I think it kind of sets the mood, has all the things I'm looking for. Nice citrus, you know, the agave, obviously a quick little pick me up, agave is a natural kind of like upper, which is fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's my go-to cocktail.
Amazing, yeah. And so, you know, you've given us a 2-for-1, I believe, already, you know, via the, you know, our take on the white Negroni, via our take on the espresso martini there. Any other cocktails you want to highlight or anything else you want to bring up that we might have missed already in the show today before we get to know yourself more as a bartender and a drinker?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's the thing that I kind of keep saying, just have fun with it, guys. Mm-hmm. You know, I appreciate everybody loving our spirit, but don't, you know, just because we're Mexican, don't think it has to be in a classic Mexican cocktail. Again, try playing around. And what you mentioned, the Mr. Potato Head kind of approach, I think is the perfect way to just play around and experience with it. And I promise you guys, playing around with this, you'll be pleasantly surprised.
Mm-hmm. I got to say as well, to the folks who run bars, who I definitely actually don't need to say this to them, but, you know, in 2024, you put a drink on the menu and it includes the word tequila in the ingredients list there. that thing is going to sell. People are, you know, people are just loving tequila these days, and you know, and
hands
with
down.
Great reason. So you know, that's going to make some money, hopefully, for a lot of folks, for everyone involved. Manny, how about it though? How about we do it? Let's get into it. The five weekly recurring questions to round out our show today.
Sure.
Starting with number one. Feel like this might be an obvious answer, but we'll see. What style or category of spirit typically enjoys the most real estate on your back bar or home bar?
Well, if you guys could see my back bar,
I can see it right now.
it's just stocked with tequila. And honestly, when I was, you know, behind the bar, behind the shtick, as we like to say, I like to keep like a balanced back bar. But being in LA, like, it definitely tends to lean a little bit more heavier towards agave. That said, I like to keep like a balanced back bar of agave. I don't know if that makes sense, right? I guess what I mean by that is that nowadays, like, the agave found on back bars tend to be up and coming brands, which is a must because it's super exciting and it helps elevate the category, right? That said, at the heart of everything I did when I was bartending was hospitality, meaning that I wanted to make sure that my back bar was both exciting and inviting. Because of this, I also like to stock my agave shelves with brands that trailblaze the way for the up-and-coming brands. You know, for example, while people might be familiar with a brand like Don Julio, very few people know how and why we became a household name. Very few people know that it's a passionate story that starts with, I mean, humble beginnings. And, you know, I'm talking about things, something out of Hollywood, except it's true. I believe that keeping a good balance of unfamiliar brands and familiar brands and sharing all their stories really made for a beautifully rich and inviting hospitality experience.
I love it. You know, I've encountered that firsthand, and I'm sure people encounter a lot, but you know, you're on the West Coast there. Don't know, are you familiar with a bar called Tony's on the Pier down in Redondo Beach, is it?
Redondo Beach is somewhere where I definitely need to get to. Like, being so close to the beach, sometimes I'm just like, yeah, I could go there tomorrow. I don't need to go there today. No, I haven't been there. I got to go.
So it's like this cool setup, very old school. It's like it's on this pier, right? And this bar, I just want to call out this fun anecdote here. So I was sat at the bar there once. They're known actually for their Mai Tais. It's not a great Mai Tai, but you do get a signature glass with it. And we'd worked on a story about this, so I went to check it out at one point. But I was sat at the bar having lunch, and a guy next to me comes in, he orders a beer, doesn't call out the beer, but then he called out the tequila specifically that he was having with it. And so that I just want to call that out in terms of, like, you know, the brand and expression he called out. And people have their preferences. So like you say, offering a well-rounded selection, but also one that's inviting. I think if you don't do that, you might be leaving money on the table.
I agree. I mean, obviously the money situation, but you know, we're trying to make people happy.
Yes.
And I think the bartender's favorite drink to make should always be the one that ultimately lands in the guest's hand, you know?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to sound too cynical there. Me bringing up money and you're talking about making people happy there. But, you know, if we can tick all of the boxes, win-win situation.
I agree.
Manny, question two for you. Which ingredient or tool do you believe to be the most undervalued in a bartender's arsenal?
That's a good one. Actually, as I'm about to take a sip of water, I think a water bottle. You know, like, it's kind of out of the blue, right? But I think the bartenders are so committed to taking care of guests that they easily forget about themselves. Amigos, stay hydrated behind the bar. Stay healthy, add longevity to your career. And staying hydrated, I think, is a simple step in the right direction. So keeping a water bottle handy, I think, is super important.
That
underrated tool.
That is a great tip, and definitely underrated, because that's the first time that's come up. So you are very much right. Stay hydrated, folks. Question number three. What's the most important piece of advice you've received while working in this industry?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think I may have touched on this earlier, but really it's something that's kind of stayed with me throughout my whole career. That it's important to sometimes understand is that you don't need to reinvent the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
All you need is a really good wheel. Like, don't get me wrong, I love cocktails that push the boundaries. But I think that as bartenders, we sometimes forget that we are making cocktails for the masses rather than just ourselves. You know what I'm saying? Like, I talk about how much I love Negronis. Negroni is a classically bitter drink. A lot of people don't care for it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just think of making like a nice ringer of a cocktail. You don't need to reinvent the wheel. You don't need to make the craziest little thing. Make things for the people.
I love it. That's great. Great advice right there. All right. Penultimate question for you here today. If you could only visit one last bar in your life, what would it be?
Oof. Yeah. I am a big fan of bars. I could be considered furniture at many bars. but I think it would be a bar out here in LA called La Descarga. So La Descarga is like a 1920s time capsule of like Little Havana with Afro-Cuban jazz playing salsa, cumbia, bachata. I mean, you're going to catch me here twirling my wife in one hand and a glass of like 1942 in the other, just having a ball. I love this bar.
Do you dance bachata, Manny?
Yeah, I dance a little bit of bachata. I'm not the best. I definitely love dancing some salsa.
Ooh.
Yeah, in my day, I have taken some ballroom lessons and done some ballroom competitions. Came out dead last, but I did it.
Wow. I think that might also be a first for us here on Cocktail College today. You know, person having competed in a ballroom competition. Amazing. I hope there's videos somewhere. I want to see those.
I might share next time I have a drink with you.
All right, then. Last question for us here today. If you knew that the next cocktail you drank was going to be your last, what would you order or make?
Ooh, this is another tough one. Well, I've been saying earlier that I love my Negronis. But if I had to look back on my last cocktail, I want that memory to be one of like sipping on paradise. And to me, that's the piña colada.
Yes. Yes, 100%.
Yeah, I think that's the one that it would be. Love that cocktail.
Would you be listening to the Piña Colada song or choosing a better, maybe a different song for that one?
Yeah, maybe a different song. I used to love that song when I was younger, and then I kind of sat and listened to lyrics. I'm like, these are some interesting lyrics.
It's kind of dark. Yeah. I've spent too much time listening to that song as well and analyzing it, but fun one. But listen, Manny, thank you so much for joining us today. Before you go, before we leave you, where can the listeners follow you? Where can the listeners find you? You're a man about town. You're a man about many towns. But where can they follow along with those journeys and maybe reach out? Maybe they want to get some advice from you. Maybe they want to say thank you very much for this white Negroni variation today.
Oh, yeah, please. I mean, the easiest way to reach out to me is, I guess, Instagram. And everyone can find me at Manny the Barkeep. You know, I'm going to be always a bartender at heart. So I've kept that handle for quite a bit. But yeah, please add me. And if you guys have any questions regarding, you know, Don Julio, tequila as a whole, cocktails, man, pepper me with them because those are the exact topics that I love talking about.
Well, thank you so much, Manny. It's been a wonderful chat today. We've loved having you on the show. I'm looking forward to catching up over a drink and watching that ballroom video.
Absolutely, Tim. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate the time and cheers.
Cheers. Thanks for listening to the Cocktail College podcast. If you enjoy listening to the show anywhere near as much as we enjoy making it, go ahead and hit subscribe and please leave a rating or review wherever you get your podcasts, whether that's Apple, Spotify, or Stitcher. And please tell your friends. Now for the credits. Cocktail College is recorded in New York City and produced by myself and Darby Seaside, who also composed our awesome theme music. Just give that a listen. I also want to give a huge shout out to everyone on the VinePair team, especially co-founders Adam Teeter and Josh Malin, editor-in-chief Joanna Sherino, and art director Danielle Greenberg, who designed our killer logo. Finally, thank you, listener, for making it this far and for giving this whole thing a purpose. Until next time. Cocktail College is brought to you by Tequila Don Julio. Don Julio Gonzalez followed his heart over his head. He loved his land, agave, and community. Basically, every choice he made was for exceptional tequila, something I know you can appreciate, Cocktail College listener. He did it por amor, and this is how people from Mexico basically live every single day. Hecho en Mexico, loved everywhere. Head to www.donjulio.com/tequila-drinks for a list of cocktails to create with Tequila Don Julio's expressions. Made with love in every drop.